It's a Friday. Time to get our best bets with our friend Ariel Epstein. She, of course, Fanatic Sportsbook, MLB Network, NBA TV. And Ariel, thanks as always for joining us. Hope you had a great holiday yesterday. And I'll start with this. I asked you about the Yankees last week. You weren't freaking out. They've now lost 7 of 8. They got swept by the Reds at home. They are 4-13 in their last 17 games. Are you starting to freak out?
I know people are freaking. I'm not yet. Happy Friday, guys. The Yankees did this a couple of years ago. They had a bad August, ended up going on to the ALCS. Everything starts to count after the trade deadline, after the All-Star break. So let's see where things are come September 10th.
Well, Ariel, the O's sit in first place, have a 2-game lead over your Yankees, and we're all thinking big. We're dreaming big. What's their World Series market look like?
You guys should think big. Now, I think it's a good time. If you want to invest in the Orioles, invest in them right now. Go take them to win the World Series, where you could get them. I'm just going to get the updated look right now. You could get the Orioles at +750, and that's even gone down in the last couple of days. The Orioles were +850 2 days ago. The time is now, because if the Orioles go out and do what they should, which is get a #2 pitcher, maybe someone like Mason Miller to help close things out in your pen, then the Orioles are going to be 5-1, and they might even pass the Yankees at this rate. So once the Orioles make the moves that they essentially should have made last year at the trade deadline,
yeah,
then you're never going to see these numbers again.
Ariel Epstein joining us. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Ariel, the Arizona Diamondbacks went to the World Series last year. They are currently a game under 500, but you like their odds to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you could get them at around +250, the D-backs, to make the playoffs. This is exactly what live betting is made for. It's not made for you to go and get a team that, let's say the D-backs, for example, were, you know, +250 preseason, and now they're -110, like in the midway point to make the playoffs. Or no, you're not getting value there. It's meant for teams like the D-backs, who were World Series runner-up, were -200 preseason to make the playoffs. Now you're getting them at +250 when it's such a tight race in the National League, and the teams they're competing against, like St. Louis, San Diego, the Mets, I don't trust any of those teams. I would trust the D-backs, who have fallen behind because their ace, Zach Gallen, was on the IL. He's back, looks good against the Athletics. They're still a top-10 lineup, and maybe the D-backs go out and get another piece. So if the D-backs get healthy and hot at the right time in that close NL race, +250 is great value for the World Series runner-ups to just make the playoffs.
Well, Ariel, let's get back to the O's. Their road trip ends in Oakland, game one of a 3-game series. Albert Suarez on the mound for the O's. Hogan Harris on the bump for the A's. And you like one of Hogan Harris's props.
Go with the over 4.5 strikeouts, around plus money for the Oakland lefty, Hogan Harris. And Orioles fans, please just, like, don't get mad at me. It doesn't mean that because Hogan Harris has 5 or more Ks that the Orioles lose tonight. It's not what I'm saying. The Orioles just strike out a lot more against lefties. They're averaging just under 6 strikeouts a game against lefty starters. That number is only about 4 strikeouts a game against righty starters. It's a tougher lineup for righty starters to navigate. And we've seen that Gunnar Henderson and Ryan O'Hearn, Colton Cowser, Cedric Mullins, they're all lefties, and Adley Rutschman and Anthony Santander switch hitters. So, like, people as if, like, Gunnar Henderson, Santander, they've proven they can hit for power against these lefties, but when you see these power hitters, like an Aaron Judge, either you're hitting for extra base hits or you're striking out. And that's what we've seen more against these lefty starters. Harris, he hasn't really faced a high K-rate lineup against lefties since 2 months ago. And when he did, he faced Texas and Tampa Bay and had at least 5 strikeouts in both those games. So Hogan Harris should have 5 strikeouts against his O's lineup tonight.
Ariel, one more from you. And the Astros and Minnesota Twins are facing tonight. I'm not all that familiar with Sean Dubin's work, but he's starting for the Astros. What do you like here?
You're not familiar with Sean Dubin because he doesn't really go more than 3 or 4 innings, which is why he's going under 3.5 strikeouts against the Twins. The Twins have been striking out so much less lately. And I'm going to take advantage because Dubin's only struck out 4 or more batters in 1 appearance out of his 15 this year. With Minnesota not striking out much, you got to go at least 5 innings for a pitcher to hit 4 strikeouts against the Twins. Since Dubin's not really making it out of the 4th inning, I'm going to fade him here and take the under 3.5 Ks.
Ariel Epstein, let the people know where they can find you.
Fanatic Sportsbook, MLB Network, NBA TV, and here every Friday, guys.
Ariel Epstein, always great. Have yourself a fantastic weekend. Will we chat next week? You're going away soon. When is that?
Next week is the last week, and then I will be in Europe the following week. I cannot
awesome.
Wait.
Awesome. I look forward to that. So
for All-Star break, I'll be out of here.
Well, enjoy that, but we will chat next week.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, Ariel. And let's now bring on our own Beltway, Ben Hall. And Ben, what are you looking at?
Yeah, I like a few plays in the MLB today. I'll start with Luis Severino, over 5.5 strikeouts. Gets to face a bad Pirates lineup tonight. And he's not a massive strikeout guy, but he has more success on the road striking guys out, and he'll be in Pittsburgh. Since June 1st, the Pirates have a 26.1% K rate. It's the 4th highest in the MLB in that time frame. And the Mets need a solid start from Severino. For a while, everybody thought they were done and buried, and they had this big comeback. Whatever happened, there's some other stuff that people think could have happened, but they had this big comeback. But then, the past 2 games, they lost to the Nats. Both were bad losses, and they're below 500 again. So they need a good start from Severino, and I think he clears the 5.5 strikeouts. Brent Rooker, over 1.5 hits, runs in RBIs at plus 100. He's a hit right-handed pitching, much better than left-handed pitching this season. He's got a slash line of 278, 358, and 505 against righties. Suarez is a reverse splits guy as well. Righties are hitting 250 against him with as good as he's been. He doesn't strike a ton of guys out, so Rooker should get a few opportunities with the fastball to do some damage with it. And earlier in the year, they faced off, and he had a base hit against him. So I like Rooker, over 1.5 hits, runs in RBIs. Yordan Alvarez, over 1.5 total bases. It's plus 125. Very rare you see that. I'm not really sure why it's like that. He's 3-for-5 against Pablo Lopez in his career. He's done a lot of damage on the road this season. He's got a slash line of 358, 433, and 660. Lopez has been good in previous years, and this year he's kind of taken a step back. And he's given up 17 home runs, which is the 5th most in the MLB overall. Yordan does a lot of damage in July, so I like him to have a good night. And then Luis Castillo, over 5.5 strikeouts. Castillo's at home tonight, where he's been much better this year, striking batters out at a 26.7% rate at T-Mobile Park compared to 20.8 on the road. Faced Toronto earlier in the year and got hit around a little bit, but still cleared the total with 6 strikeouts. And Toronto's starting to strike out a little bit more. Earlier in the year, they were one of the lower K-rate teams, but as the months gone on, they've gotten up there. They're at 24.2% K rate since June 15th. That's the 9th highest in the MLB in that time frame. So I like Luis Castillo, over 5.5 strikeouts.
I'm curious, when I was talking about hypothetical trades, you started shaking your head. What didn't you like about this hypothetical?
I don't want to give up Kerstedt. I would hold on to Kerstedt.
So who would you trade?
I mean, it depends what you're getting. If you're gonna get one of the top guys, or Crochet. One, I don't value Crochet. I guess I don't not value him, but to give up a Holiday or Basayo for that,
they're not trading Holiday.
You don't think so? Yeah. I mean, who knows what they do?
Yeah,
I wouldn't see it. But like, why would you give Basayo away then? If Adley can't catch as well, Creed Williams is the one fine catcher. I wouldn't give.
Yeah, I'm starting to value Basayo. Look, it depends on the move. I mean, you're. Scared money don't make money.
Right.
Yeah.
You gotta make Crochet, a move. Imagine Crochet coming in like the 8th or 9th, striking guys out. Like, if you're going to have to get him, you're going to have to get one of them up.
Yeah, I hear you. Like, if I'm talking about hypothetically making a big move and maybe one-stop shopping with the White Sox. You're going to have to give something up to do
but
that.
I don't think Kerstedt would get it done.
Kerstedt plus.
Yeah, it would have to be. No, yeah, but him being the face of it, I love Kerstedt and value him. I want him in Baltimore, but I think they're gonna like last year. The whole Cease thing came out, and they were like they wanted Holiday. Mm-hmm. If they're gonna do it again, they're gonna say no to Holiday, I guess.
Yeah, they're going to.
So it's but
if you're not trading Holiday for Dylan Cease, you're not trading it for Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, this is not the year to like need what the Orioles need. It sucks because there's not every NL team's alive except for maybe the Rockies. And do we want Cal
Marlins?
Yeah, but Tanner Scott strikes out or walks. If I went in the box against him, I'd be better off holding my bat on my shoulder because he'd probably walk me.
Yeah, he does walk some guys. Yeah, right now, You know, the Cubs are starting to fade. They're six out in the wild card. But, yeah, everybody else. The Nationals are starting to fade. They've dropped to 4.5 out in the wild card.
I'll take Finnegan.
I was about to say, there's some arms in that bullpen.
Yeah, you're going to find some bullpen arms out there. Maybe the Reds start to fade. But, yeah, starters' arms, I don't know. There's not a whole lot of... there in the National League. Maybe Cal Quantrill with the Colorado Rockies.
He's actually been pretty good, and it's crazy because he's been good at home, too. Pitching good at Colorado is, like, bizarre. You don't find guys who do that much.
Coming up next, we'll get to our TWIB notes, and All-Star Game starters have been announced. Any snubs out there? We'll give our thoughts. Also, we have another addition to the Home Run Derby. Who is joining Gunnar Henderson? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
Hope to see. I think we have, what, 5 or 6, so I'm hoping that's how many we have. I mean, everybody's very deserving, and hopefully all of them get to make it.
That's Gunnar Henderson being asked how many All-Stars the Orioles will have, and the reserves are announced later, but the starters were announced already, and two Orioles so far, Adley Rutschman starting at catcher, and Gunnar Henderson at shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, no surprises there. I mean, we pretty much assumed all of that. And you look at the guys that it failed out to get a starting spot in the All-Star game. Jordan Westberg, Jose Ramirez ended up edging him out. Soto and Stephen Kwan ended up edging out Anthony Santander. And O'Hearn was the one that came the closest, but you can't really...
Jordan Alvarez.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can't really be too upset about that.
Yeah, Jordan Alvarez is stud. So Adley's starting to catch your Vlad Guerrero at first base. Mm-hmm. He started to heat up of late.
Sure.
Jose Altuve at second base. You mentioned Ramirez at third. Gunner at short. And the outfielders are Judge, Soto, and Kwan in the National League. William Contreras starting to catcher. Bryce Harper first base. Ketel Marte at second. Alec Baum at third base. Trey Turner's the shortstop. He's hardly played. Christian Yelich, Fernando Tatis Jr., and a great story, Jerickson Profar making his first All-Star game as a starter.
That's like, Profar is one of and countless, but that's why sports are so cool. I mean, like, just somewhere, for him to make his first All-Star game this deep into his career, just... Crazy.
No, it's really cool. By the way, Alec Baum, who we mentioned is starting, has announced he is joining the Home Run Derby. Alec Baum, Gunnar Henderson, those are the only names. A lot of the big names have already turned it down.
Yeah.
It's becoming like the dunk contest.
Yeah, right. I'm really excited to see Gunnar, man. And it was so cool last year with Adley and him switch hitting in the middle of it for the first time ever. And heck, even a few years prior, Ken, when Mancini did it.
Yeah.
What was it, 2021? I mean, that was really awesome when he did it as well.
By the way, I did forget to mention National League DH is Shohei Ohtani.
Surprise.
Who's having a monster? Anybody, like, do you feel like any of the Orioles really were snubs, so to speak?
I don't know if they were snubbed, really. I mean, I guess Mountcastle had stunk because, you know, he was missing some games when the final phase of the voting was going through. That, of course, didn't help him out. But I can't really say that they were snubbed. I mean, they were deserving candidates who ended up going in above them. But now you just wonder how many of those guys end up making it.
I'm going to say...
Because now you get into the point where, of course, all 30 teams get a representative, and that's what kind of convolutes it a little bit. And then, of course, pitching, that was not voted on by fans. We expect Corbin Burns. And then, Ken, you were the first one on it with Craig Kimbrell, and I think he's in too, man.
I see 4 right now. I see, obviously, Adley and Gunner, Corbin Burns, and Craig Kimbrell. Like, those now could... Anthony Santander get picked? Possibly. Could Jordan Westberg get picked? Possibly. Yeah. And then the other one, and I don't think the chances are good, but I guess it's possible, Grayson Rodriguez, if he finishes strong. Like, if he gets to 11 wins and has another good start, I think there's a possibility. But 4 is a good number. I think there's an outside shot at 5.
Ken, let me give you Craig Kimbrell's numbers last year. Heading into the All-Star break. And remember, he was an All-Star last year. 3.41 ERA, 171 batting average against, 37 innings there, 57 strikeouts in 37 innings, where now, I mean, the ERA a lot lower at 2.23. The whip is a lot lower than it was. Strikeouts around the same, a little less at 48. But it just shows you how much better his first half has been this year. And then when you look at the recent stretch that he's been on, last 20 games, 19 innings, he's given up just one earned run, 27 strikeouts in 19 innings of work, five hits, five walks, I mean, 0.82 batting average. He's been really, really good in this stretch.
How many saves did he have at the All-Star break last year? Do you have that? Because he's got I don't think he had. He didn't finish the year with over 30 saves a year ago, I don't think.
I don't know why it's not listing.
And he's got
14.
Yeah,
14
and he's saves. Got 21 right now. Yeah. As we got another week of baseball.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you just go from where he was prior to this recent stretch. The elevated ERA, 4.73. I mean, the Nats game, that was the low point where the O's ended up winning that crazy one in extra innings and didn't even pitch at all in the Yankees series. And it just looked like things were really going south really quickly. But for him to rebound like this, I mean, I still want to see a high leverage arm. I'm not saying, okay, let's just roll with Craig Kimbrel. I still want to see a high leverage arm, but, you know, hats off to Kimbrel.
Yeah, I was just about to say, let me make this clear. I don't think that changes the Orioles' needs.
Not at
because
all.
He is 36 years old, and of course, in playoff years, Jason will tell you that's 40. Yeah. But they need another arm to add to the back end of that bullpen. And by the way, they need an arm to add in the middle of that bullpen, which we discussed earlier in the show. But still, Craig Kimbrel should be commended for the first half he's had, especially when there was a time when we thought he wasn't getting the closer's job back.
No, for sure. For sure. And look, I'm sure all of us are going to kind of hold our breath a little bit, that first postseason experience, considering what happened last year in Philly. But right now, ride the wave.
You have to. You have to. By the way, I do want to mention Christian Walker, former Oriole, who is now with the Diamondbacks. He homered again against he's got seven homers. Like, what he's doing at Dodger Stadium is disgusting.
It's unbelievable.
And by the way, he should be an All-Star.
I'm looking, I had that for BBT. 138 at-bats in Dodger Stadium. Christian Walker's hitting .341 with 19 homers. That is insane. This year, most home runs against the Dodgers. Christian Walker has 9. The next closest, three guys, Aaron Judge, Manny Machado, Jock Peterson with 3.
Yeah, and 9 and 7 of those are at Dodger Stadium.
It's crazy. I mean, you talk about ownage, and we bring up Ryan Mountcastle against the Blue Jays. I mean, that's like, keeps it going to the nth degree.
Yeah, Christian Walker, you could argue a late bloomer, a guy that was an Oriole at one point. I remember when they brought him up, and it seemed clear that he was not a major league player. Well, he's a major league player. He's also a Gold Glove caliber first baseman.
Yeah, I mean, he was in that the farm system during that 12-16 where they're winning most games in the American League, where, of course, it wasn't anywhere close to as good or deep, but yeah, never, he hit that second wind when he left here.
Yeah, they didn't need Christian Walker because they had Chris Davis, remember?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that worked out really well. Hey, coming up next, Orioles and the A's start a 3-game series tonight in Oakland. Orioles' last trip to Oakland because, of course, the A's are moving to Sacramento. Martin Gallegos covers the A's for MLB.com. He joins us next. Orioles start a 3-game series in Oakland tonight against the A's. Their final trip to Oakland because the A's are going to be playing in Sacramento next year. Joining us now to talk some A's, Martin Gallegos covers the A's for MLB.com, and he joins us now. And Martin, thank you so much for joining us. It's interesting looking at the roster. Like, there are a lot of names that I think the lay baseball fan isn't familiar with, starting with tonight's starter. I am not familiar with Hogan Harris's work.
Yeah, you know, a lot of young guys. First off, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
You know, a lot of young guys on this team. And, you know, they're in a rebuilding phase right now. And right now, a lot of the guys that you'll see on the field, these are guys who have been coming up through their organization, up through their system. And now they're up here in the majors trying to kind of figure out their own way up here, trying to establish themselves as major leaguers. And, you know, like any young team, they've gone through their ups and downs, obviously more downs than ups this year based on the record that they have. But there is some optimism about the guys that they do have here. But obviously in terms of wins and losses standpoint, I mean, it's been a tough last 3 years, and they're trying to kind of get to the finish line of this rebuild and try to get back into you know, at some point, you know, more successful baseball here.
Martin, Ken alluded to it. This is going to be the Orioles' final trip to the Coliseum because Oakland's going to start playing games in Sacramento before the full move to Vegas. How has it been like covering this team this season, knowing that they're going to be on the move?
Yeah, it's been a little weird. You know, I don't think it really, you know, obviously when the announcement came out that it was official they'd be moving to Sacramento next year, it was kind of something that, you know, kind of throws you, you know, off a little bit. But then as the season goes on, you kind of focus on the everyday, you know, grind of the baseball season and just kind of taking it day by day. But I think, especially as it gets to the second half and that last month of the season and definitely that last series of the season in the Coliseum, it's gonna be, I think, emotional for a lot of people. You know, it's kind of hard to believe that there's not going to be, you know, any more baseball in that stadium. I mean, for whatever, however many years, you know, over 50 years they've been playing there. And, you know, the city of Oakland's always had the A's there and a lot of memories, a lot of great teams that have come through there. And to think that, you know, it's over next year, I think, you know, a lot of people, I think the players and coaches just kind of take it day by day. But I think, you know, as it gets closer to the end, it's going to be tough for a lot of these people because in this organization, I mean, a lot of these coaches, I know the players change a lot, but the coaches have been here a long time. The people in the front office have been here a long time. So, you know, there's a lot of people who hold this place, you know, near and dear to their heart. So I think it's been weird just kind of thinking about, you know, this is going to be the end. And it's kind of, you don't really know, you know, what to expect.
With the move happening next year to Sacramento, Mark Kotze, their manager, could you expect them just kind of wiping the slate clean when they move?
I don't think so. I think, you know, obviously the wins and losses haven't been great, but I think Kotze, you talk to anybody in the front office, A's general manager, David Force, and they really have high praise for how he's kind of handled the whole situation. I mean, he was dealt a tough hand to begin with. I mean, once he took over, they really just tore down the whole roster and gave him that first season. I mean, it was just a lot of guys who were, you know, non-roster invites to spring training or guys who were, you know, DFA'd and trying to kind of figure it out how they were going to restructure that roster in such a short amount of time. So I think they've focused less on the wins and losses and more on the development of young players. And now there's more than a few young players who are now up in the big leagues, kind of developing. And Kotze's done a good job, I think, of leading the young guys. I think he's a good manager for a young team just because he's not too far removed from playing the game. And he gets these guys to play hard every day and they all love playing for him. So,
we're talking
on the horizon.
Martin, you there?
Around here for a little bit.
Sorry, you were cutting in and out a little bit there. We're talking to Martin Gallegos. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. You mentioned a rebuilding team. You're sitting there. They could be a seller at the deadline. Do you think they will be big sellers at the deadline? Could you see Mason Miller getting traded at the deadline?
Yeah, obviously that's the main name that everybody brings up. To me, it's very difficult to see them trade Miller. I think it'd have to take, obviously, a huge package, a lot of prospects in that deal because, I mean, he is a rookie. He's still under control for a while. I don't think they're necessarily looking to move him, but I think if they get really floored by another team, I think the conversation is there, and I think they definitely would consider it. But, you know, they've got other guys on their team, like Brent Rooker's having a great year. He's possibly another all-star for a second year in a row, and I think he'd be an attractive guy to a lot of other teams. Miguel Andujar is having a really good year. They've got a couple of relievers who might be of interest to other teams. So they're definitely going to see them make some moves, but obviously Miller would be the big, you know, name in that. And I'm not sure if they're really at that point yet that they'd trade him, but it's definitely an interesting possibility. And I'm sure there's no shortage of teams that are looking for a flame-throwing closer like him.
Well, Mason Miller, he got his feet wet with the A's at the end of last season. But, I mean, did you ever envision this out of him?
I mean, he was dominant. I mean, he came up as a starter, and we saw him that first day. He was just pumping 101, 102. I mean, he was doing what he was doing now as a reliever, as a starter. The one thing we had always heard is, you know, there's, you know, a lot of injury concerns with him. And obviously he had an injury last year with his elbow that caused him to miss almost 4 months, I believe. Luckily, it wasn't Tommy John like they originally thought it might be, and he was able to come back at the end of the year. But I think the one thing with him is I think everyone knows he has this potential to be a dominant pitcher. It's just keeping him healthy is kind of the concern. Even through this year, I mean, they're really cautious with his workload. They try not to give him too much at a time. You know, back-to-backs are very rare unless they really need him on a day. They try to give him as much rest as they can. So, you know, to develop into such a dominant closer in such a short amount of time, I mean, it's tough for any young pitcher to handle the ninth inning. And I mean, he's done it pretty flawlessly. He's had a couple of hiccups here and there, but every single time he, you know, blows a save or doesn't have a great outing, he seems to bounce back with another dominant outing. So I think the potential is showing through, but I mean, to have transitioned this quickly into everybody by a little bit of a surprise.
Martin, I wanted to ask you, I know he's hurt right now, but about Darryl Hernáez, a guy that you guys got in the Cole Irvin trade. What have you thought of him in the time you've seen him? Where does he project to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, the A's love him. You know, he's a really good hitter, and I think over the past year or so, he really developed on the defensive side where they feel really comfortable about him as a shortstop. I think when they first acquired him, they were kind of struggling to kind of figure out where he might play. They were thinking about third base, second base. Shortstop didn't really feel like a legitimate option for him, but, you know, he really improved with his defense a lot. I think third base is still an option for him as well, but, I mean, he hit his way onto the team at a spring training. Made this team, and he was, you know, going to be probably their everyday third baseman. Got an injury, and then now he's kind of rehabbing right now. But once he comes back, I think he's a part of this team's future. I think they're really excited about him. They really think, like, he could be a really good hitting shortstop, just anywhere on the infield. Really think the bat is what really excites them.
Martin, you mentioned Brent Rooker earlier, and he was the A's all-star selection last year. But this year, I mean, his numbers across the board have been even better than last year. What type of growth have you seen out of him this year?
Yeah, he's a more consistent player. I mean, obviously last year he had that 30-homer season. One looks at that, but he had a lot more, like, prolonged slumps that he went through last year. And really, last year was his first full season as a big leaguer. I mean, he'd had other seasons with Twins and with the Padres, but...
I think we lost.
Yeah, I think we did too. Yes. Martin Gallegos covers the A's for MLB.com. Orioles and the A's start a 3-game set. You know, what's interesting to me, and I was going to ask him, but these are some phone problems. It goes deeper than just the A's leaving Oakland. In the last 10 years, the Golden State Warriors played in Oakland right across the street. They moved to San Francisco. And the Raiders moved from Oakland to Vegas, which potentially is where the A's are following. A great sports town to go from 3 professional franchises to now none in a decade is pretty incredible.
It's sad. I always feel so bad when any team moves. And look, obviously I wasn't old enough for when the Colts moved, but I can only imagine the devastation for this area. I mean, for the Orioles or the Ravens to move, I couldn't even fathom that. And like you said, Ken, they've had 3 teams leave in the span of, what, a few years?
It's a shame because it's a great sports town, blue-collar sports town. Oh, yeah. But unfortunately, the financials of sports, and you see, Oakland, that stadium, I've been there. I was there for baseball in the mid-2000s. I saw Eric Bedard throw a 3-hitter there. Mm-hmm. I was there for the AFC Championship game against the Raiders. It's a dump. It was a dump 20 years ago. It's a dump now. It needs replacing, and because they wouldn't replace it, now they've lost everything.
What's wild about that, Ken, I remember asking Bordy, I'll ask him again on BBT tonight, just about the Coliseum. This was years ago when I was doing a weekend show. He loved playing in Oakland. He loved playing the Coliseum. He said it was like the best infield that he's played in. I was like stunned when
he said
that.
Which is surprising because it was the last multi-purpose stadium, so you'd have games in September where the A's are playing, and you got the lines from the football there. Like, that shouldn't be great for the...
No! I remember being so shocked when he said that, so I can't wait to ask Bordy about it again.
See if he has a different answer this time.
Maybe. It's possible.
Bordy, it depends on his mood.
Yes.
He does. As you know, we know from Mike Bordy.
Oh, absolutely.
Fluctuates,
man.
Yeah, big. Orioles start a 3-game series in Oakland tonight against the A's, their final trip to Oakland, because the A's are going to be playing in Sacramento next year. Joining us now to talk some A's, Martin Gallegos covers the A's for MLB.com, and he joins us now. And Martin, thank you so much for joining us. It's interesting looking at the roster. Like, there are a lot of names that I think the lay baseball fan isn't familiar with, starting with tonight's starter. I am not familiar with Hogan Harris's work.
Yeah, you know, a lot of young guys. First off, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
You know, a lot of young guys on this team. And, you know, they're in a rebuilding phase right now. And right now, a lot of the guys that you'll see on the field, these are guys who have been coming up through their organization, up through their system. And now they're up here in the majors trying to kind of figure out their own way up here, trying to establish themselves as major leaguers. And, you know, like any young team, they've gone through their ups and downs, obviously more downs than ups this year based on the record that they have. But there is some optimism about the guys that they do have here. But obviously in terms of the wins and losses standpoint, I mean, it's been a tough last 3 years, and they're trying to kind of get to the finish line of this rebuild and try to get back into, you know, at some point, you know, more successful baseball here.
Martin, Ken alluded to it. This is going to be the Orioles' final trip to the Coliseum because Oakland's going to start playing games in Sacramento before the full move to Vegas. How has it been like covering this team this season, knowing that they're going to be on the move?
Yeah, it's been a little weird. You know, I don't think it really, you know, obviously when the announcement came out that it was official they'd be moving to Sacramento next year, it was kind of something that, you know, kind of throws you, you know, off a little bit. But then as the season goes on, you kind of focus on the everyday, you know, grind of the baseball season and just kind of taking it day by day. But I think, especially as it gets to the second half and that last month of the season and definitely that last series of the season in the Coliseum, it's gonna be, I think, emotional for a lot of people. You know, it's kind of hard to believe that there's not going to be, you know, any more baseball in that stadium. I mean, for however many years, you know, over 50 years they've been playing there. And, you know, the city of Oakland's always had the A's there and a lot of memories, a lot of great teams that have come through there. And to think that, you know, it's over next year, I think, you know, a lot of people, I think the players and coaches just kind of take it day by day. But I think, you know, as it gets closer to the end, it's going to be tough for a lot of these people because especially in this organization, I mean, a lot of these coaches, I know the players change a lot, but the coaches have been here a long time. The people in the front office have been here a long time. So, you know, there's a lot of people who hold this place, you know, near and dear to their heart. So I think it's been weird just kind of thinking about, you know, this is going to be the end. And it's kind of, you don't really know, you know, what to expect.
With the move happening next year to Sacramento, Mark Kotze, their manager, could you expect them just kind of wiping the slate clean when they move?
I don't think so. I think, you know, obviously the wins and losses haven't been great, but I think Kotze, you talk to anybody in the front office, A's general manager, David Force, and they really have high praise for how he's kind of handled the whole situation. I mean, he was dealt a tough hand to begin with. I mean, once he took over, they really just tore down the whole roster and gave him that first season. I mean, it was just a lot of guys who were, you know, non-roster invites to spring training or guys who were, you know, DFA'd and trying to kind of figure it out how they were going to restructure that roster in such a short amount of time. So I think they've focused less on the wins and losses and more on the development of young players. And now there's more than a few young players who are now up in the big leagues, kind of developing. And Kotze's done a good job, I think, of leading the young guys. I think he's a good manager for a young team just because he's not too far removed from playing the game. And he gets these guys to play hard every day and they all love playing for him. So,
we're talking
on the horizon.
Martin, you there?
Around here for a little bit.
Sorry, you were cutting in and out a little bit there. We're talking to Martin Gallegos. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. You mentioned a rebuilding team. You're sitting there. They could be a seller at the deadline. Do you think they will be big sellers at the deadline? Could you see Mason Miller getting traded at the deadline?
Yeah, obviously that's the main name that everybody brings up. To me, it's very difficult to see them trade Miller. I think it'd have to take obviously a huge package, a lot of prospects in that deal because, I mean, he is a rookie. He's still under control for a while. I don't think they're necessarily looking to move him, but I think if they get really floored by another team, I think that the conversation is there, and I think they definitely would consider it. But, you know, they've got other guys on their team, like Brent Rooker's having a great year. He's possibly another all-star for a second year in a row, and I think he'd be an attractive guy to a lot of other teams. Miguel Andujar is having a really good year. They've got a couple of relievers who might be of interest to other teams. So they're definitely going to see them make some moves, but obviously Miller would be the big, you know, name in that. And I'm not sure if they're really at that point yet that they'd trade him, but it's definitely an interesting possibility. And I'm sure there's no shortage of teams that are looking for a flame-throwing closer like him.
Well, Mason Miller, he got his feet wet with the A's at the end of last season. But, I mean, did you ever envision this out of him?
I mean, he was dominant. I mean, he came up as a starter, and we saw him that first day. He was just pumping 101, 102. I mean, he was doing what he was doing now as a reliever, as a starter. The one thing we had always heard is, you know, there is, you know, a lot of injury concerns with him. And obviously he had an injury last year with his elbow that caused him to miss almost 4 months, I believe. Luckily, it wasn't Tommy John like they originally thought it might be. And he was able to come back at the end of the year. But I think the one thing with him is I think everyone knows he has this potential to be a dominant pitcher. It's just keeping him healthy is kind of the concern. Even through this year, I mean, they're really cautious with his workload. They try not to give him too much at a time. You know, back-to-backs are very rare unless they really need him on a day. They try to give him as much rest as they can. So, you know, to develop into such a dominant closer in such a short amount of time, I mean, it's tough for any young pitcher to handle the ninth inning. I mean, he's done it pretty flawlessly. He's had a couple of hiccups here and there, but every single time he, you know, blows a save or doesn't have a great outing, seems to bounce back with another dominant outing. So I think the potential is showing through, but I mean, to have transitioned this quickly into everybody by a little bit of a surprise.
Martin, I wanted to ask you, I know he's hurt right now, but about Darryl Hernaiz, a guy that you guys got in the Cole Irvin trade. What have you thought of him in the time you've seen him? Where does he project to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, the A's love him. You know, he's a really good hitter, and I think over the past year or so, he really developed on the defensive side where they feel really comfortable about him as a shortstop. I think when they first acquired him, they were kind of struggling to kind of figure out where he might play. They were thinking about third base, second base. Shortstop didn't really feel like a legitimate option for him, but, you know, he really improved with his defense a lot. I think third base is still an option for him as well, but, I mean, he hit his way onto the team out of spring training. Made this team, and he was, you know, going to be probably their everyday third baseman. Got an injury, and then now he's kind of rehabbing right now. But once he comes back, I think he's a part of this team's future. I think they're really excited about him. They really think, like, he could be a really good hitting shortstop just anywhere on the infield. Really think the bat is what really excites them.
Martin, you mentioned Brent Rooker earlier, and he was the A's all-star selection last year. But this year, I mean, his numbers across the board have been even better than last year. What type of growth have you seen out of him this year?
Yeah, he's a more consistent player. I mean, obviously last year he had that 34 one looks at that. But he had a lot more, like, prolonged slumps that he went through last year. And really, last year was his first full season as a big leaguer. I mean, he'd had other seasons with Twins and with the Padres, but
I think we lost.
Yeah, I think we did too. Yes. Martin Gallegos covers the A's for MLB.com. Orioles and the A's start a 3-game set. You know, what's interesting to me, and I was going to ask him, but these are some phone problems. It goes deeper than just the A's leaving Oakland. In the last 10 years, the Golden State Warriors played in Oakland right across the street. They moved to San Francisco. And the Raiders moved from Oakland to Vegas, which potentially is where the A's are following. A great sports town to go from 3 professional franchises to now none in a decade is pretty incredible.
It's sad. I always feel so bad when any team moves. And look, obviously I wasn't old enough for when the Colts moved, but I can only imagine the devastation for this area. I mean, for the Orioles or the Ravens to move, I couldn't even fathom that. And like you said, Ken, they've had 3 teams leave in the span of, what, a few years.
It's a shame because it's a great sports town, a blue-collar sports town. Oh, yeah. But unfortunately, the financials of sports, and you see Oakland, that stadium, I've been there. I was there for baseball in the mid-2000s. I saw Eric Bedard throw a 3-hitter there. Mm-hmm. I was there for the AFC Championship game against the Raiders. It's a dump. It was a dump 20 years ago. It's a dump now. It needs replacing, and because they wouldn't replace it, now they've lost everything.
What's wild about that, Ken, I remember asking Bordy, I'll ask him again on BBT tonight, just about the Coliseum. This was years ago when I was doing a weekend show. He loved playing in Oakland. He loved playing the Coliseum. He said it was like the best infield that he's played in. I was like stunned when
Which is surprising
that.
Because you it was the last multi-purpose stadium, so you'd have games in September where the A's are playing, and you got the lines from the football there. Like, that shouldn't be great for the...
No! I remember being so shocked when he said that, so I can't wait to ask Bordy about it again.
See if he has a different answer this time.
Maybe. It's possible.
Bordy, it depends on his mood.
Yes.
He does. They, as you know, we know from Mike Bordy.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Like, he... like
fluctuates, man.
Yeah, big.
Highs, lows.
Yeah, you just never know what you're getting with Bordy. I'm kidding. He's obviously very steady. Orioles and the A's start a three-game series tonight in Oakland. That game is not until, what, 10 o'clock? But
9:40.
But don't you fret, because Baltimore baseball tonight coming up at 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bordy and the Bone.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Bordick, Tim Barbalace. Before the Bone gets out to Cambridge, and before Bordy does whatever Bordy does on a Friday after the work schedule.
He was at a hot dog eating contest.
Saw that.
Yeah, he was telling me about it Wednesday. It was at Cross Street Market. I think it was the Watershed.
Oh, yeah, the Atlas Place.
Yes. He did not participate.
He didn't?
No, I was trying to push him into doing it, but I don't think he had any desire.
I would love to see him Bordy in the hot dog. Well, I'm going to give him a hard time about that when he comes in. He might be here now. Hey, coming up next, we had Rita Hubbard on Tuesday, and Rita's always got her ear to the streets. She told us the streets are saying that the Orioles are looking to extend Anthony Santander. So we'll ask the question. Should the O's re-sign Anthony Santander? We also have a poll. That's next here on The Fan.
Walt Frazier was just Clyde.
He was just Clyde.
Driven to right field. 4-2 Yankees. A bullet home run by Santander.
Yes, Network with the call. Anthony Santander coming off that monster June where he homered 13 times. He's got 22 home runs on the year, 56 RBIs. Batting average is .234, but he's also playing very good defense in right field. He turned 30 in October. We were talking to Rita Hubbard, our weekly Tuesday chat. She said the streets are talking about maybe the Orioles wanting to extend Anthony Santander. So I asked you the question, Bone. Would you be interested in a Santander extension?
I'm so torn on this one, Ken. I really am. I mean, he's on pace for a career year. His career high in home runs is 33 back in 2022. I mean, he's on pace to demolish that. He's on pace for a career high in RBIs, slugging percentage. I mean, he's picking the opportune time to having this type of standout year being in a contract year. And that's despite a really slow start.
Yeah, we were talking about the contract year's really affecting him.
Yeah, April and May, man, it was a serious struggle. And then he was the best power hitting player in baseball in June, where he hit 13 bombs.
Not named Aaron Judge.
Yes. But if you could get a 2 to 3 year, the number makes sense. I'm okay with it. But it just gets difficult when you have all of these guys in the pipeline, right? Where you got Heston Kjerstad. What happens with him? Heck, even guys on the come like a Dylan Beavers who could be here maybe at some point next year. I'm so torn with it, man. Kowser, and obviously the mainstays from the rebuild. Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, Anthony Santander. They are all not going to be here probably even next season. So it's kind of, I need to see how the dominoes fall, but
part of the some of the dominoes will fall by the deadline.
Exactly.
I like you. I said extend him, but there's a caveat.
Yes,
there.
That's
3 years, $45 million,
yes,
dollars,
like
something like that.
Per,
yeah, like I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Anything else? Probably not.
That's
because they have so, like, what are they loaded with? Outfielders, power hitting outfielders. Like, so
what makes him so valuable is the fact that, I mean, he's a switch hitter. So, I mean, the best power hitting switch hitter in baseball. And what kind of scares me is, I mean, you expect him to have a market. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be like a serious bidding war, but I don't know. And we put out the poll, IA1057 The Fan on Twitter. Rita Hubbard joined us earlier this week, said the streets are saying that the Orioles are interested in possibly extending Anthony Santander. Would you be in favor of a Santander extension, or should the O's move into 2025 and beyond with their younger outfielders, excuse me, over 200 votes in already. 76% extend him. 24% let him walk.
Well, everybody loves Anthony Santander.
Yeah, so Tony Tater.
Yeah, like so. It doesn't surprise me with a poll like this where everybody's almost any player not named Austin Hayes, I think people would say they'd be overwhelmingly saying extend him. I just think there's a lot of variables in play here. What do they think Colton Cowser is going to be? Is he still here when the dust settles? Heston Kerstad, same thing. Dylan Beavers, you mentioned. Like, they got a bunch of dudes. Kobe Mayo, is he eventually a corner outfielder? Like, there's a lot of variables here. The one thing in his favor, as you pointed out, he's the one switch hitter. And the power numbers are there. He's probably going to obliterate any home run year he's ever had, and it's a great time to do it because it's a walk year. I think when the season began, I assumed he was going to walk.
That's where I was, yeah.
And like, they weren't going to make any effort. They got all these guys. I do wonder, though, depending on who goes at the deadline, does that change their calculus?
I think it absolutely will, and I think this, you know, question is definitely something that we will explore again next month when the dust sort of settles. And even after that point, Ken, I mean, in the offseason, there's going to be, like, is Hayes here now? I remember you saying last year,
I thought one of them would be gone.
Yeah, and I didn't disagree with you where you're trying to maybe sell high on Hayes, who was starting center fielder in the All-Star game last year. But it is going to be fascinating, and he's not that old of a guy. He's 29 years old right now. I mean, you can still get, at a minimum, another couple of really productive seasons out of him.
Yeah, I feel like the Orioles, and they do a lot of things right, I felt like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too this offseason. Like, I'm going to keep all my prospects, and I'm going to keep all my major league guys and try to suck as much juice out of that piece of fruit as they can. And with Austin Hayes, and we like Austin Hayes, and he comes on the show.
Absolutely.
Like, it might have been the right time to sell high on Austin Hayes coming off an All-Star appearance, especially when he's had injury issues in the past.
For sure. And because you got some of the guys in the pipeline, like we were saying, and Cowser, of course, got off to that really hot start. And Beavers have had Kerstad now being up here now, where it's you know, it kind of creates this logjam where you're trying to get creative, Brandon Hyde is, and getting these young guys reps. And now Hayes is kind of, you know, basically just going up against lefties.
A reminder, we are 25 days away from the trade deadline. And I fully expect, and I've, man, the day after the trade deadline, if they do what they did a year ago,
there's going to be
an I've got something to say.
Yeah, they deserve.
I expect some of these dominoes to be gone to affect what their decision making is this coming off season. Like, I don't think everybody's back.
No, there's no shot. I think the thing that I'm most interested in is what, if any, of the guys on the major league roster right now are included in those potential deals. And keep going back to Orion Mountcastle. You know, is he part of something? And do they part ways with one of their top four guys, like a Kerstad, a Mayo, a Basayo? We both don't expect Jackson Holliday to be in that mix, but do any of those guys go elsewhere?
It's going to be an interesting 3+ weeks. We will be locked in on it. If something goes down, we will have immediate reaction on it. But coming up next, it's a big MLB.com hour. Orioles and the A's, as we mentioned, starting a 3-game set in Oakland tonight. Jake Rill covers the O's for MLB.com. We'll get his thoughts on the way they're playing, on this bullpen, on Anthony Santander, on much more. Jake Rill joins us next here on The Fan.
Walt Frazier was just Clyde.
He was just Clyde.
Driven to right field. 4-2 Yankees. A bullet home run by Santander.
Yes, Network with the call. Anthony Santander coming off that monster June where he homered 13 times. He's got 22 home runs on the year, 56 RBIs. Batting average is .234, but he's also playing very good defense in right field. He turned 30 in October. We were talking to Rita Hubbard, our weekly Tuesday chat. She said the streets are talking about maybe the Orioles wanting to extend Anthony Santander. So I asked you the question, Bone. Would you be interested in a Santander extension?
I'm so torn on this one, Ken. I really am. I mean, he's on pace for a career year. His career high in home runs is 33 back in 2022. I mean, he's on pace to demolish that. He's on pace for a career high in RBIs, slugging percentage. I mean, he's picking the opportune time to having this type of standout year being in a contract year. And that's despite a really slow start.
Yeah, we were talking about the contract year's really affecting him.
Yeah, April and May, man, it was a serious struggle. And then he was the best power hitting player in baseball in June, where he hit 13 bombs.
Not named Aaron Judge.
Yes, yes. But if you could get a 2 to 3 year, the number makes sense. I'm okay with it, but it just gets difficult when you have all of these guys in the pipeline, right? Where you got Heston Kjerstad. What happens with him? Heck, even guys on the come like a Dylan Beavers who could be here maybe at some point next year. I'm so torn with it, man. Kowser, and obviously the mainstays from the rebuild. Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, Anthony Santander. They're all not going to be here probably even next season. So it's kind of, I need to see how the dominoes fall, but
part of the some of the dominoes will fall by the deadline.
Exactly.
I like you. I said extend him, but there's a caveat.
Yes,
there.
That's
3 years, $45 million,
yes, like
something like that.
Per,
yeah. Like I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Anything else? Probably not.
That's
because they have so, like, what are they loaded with? Outfielders, power hitting outfielders. Like, so
what makes him so valuable is the fact that, I mean, he's a switch hitter. So, I mean, the best power hitting switch hitter in baseball. And what kind of scares me is, I mean, you expect him to have a market. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be like a serious bidding war, but I don't know. And we put out the poll, IA1057 The Fan on Twitter. Rita Hubbard joined us earlier this week, said the streets are saying that the Orioles are interested in possibly extending Anthony Santander. Would you be in favor of a Santander extension, or should the O's move into 2025 and beyond with their younger outfielders? Excuse me, over 200 votes in already. 76% extend him, 24% let him walk.
Well, everybody loves Anthony Santander.
Yeah, so Tony Tater.
Yeah, like, so it doesn't surprise me with a poll like this where everybody's, almost any player not named Austin Hayes, I think people would say, they'd be overwhelmingly saying extend him. I just think there's a lot of variables in play here. What do they think Colton Cowser is going to be? Is he still here when the dust settles? Heston Kjerstad, same thing. Dylan Beavers, you mentioned. Like, they got a bunch of dudes. Kobe Mayo, is he eventually a corner outfielder? Like, there's a lot of variables here. The one thing in his favor, as you pointed out, he's the one switch hitter. And the power numbers are there. He's probably going to obliterate any home run year he's ever had, and it's a great time to do it because it's a walk year. I think when the season began, I assumed he was going to walk.
That's where I was, yeah.
And like, they weren't going to make any effort. They got all these guys. I do wonder, though, depending on who goes at the deadline, does that change their calculus?
I think it absolutely will, and I think this, question is definitely something that we will explore again next month when the dust sort of settles. And even after that point, Ken, I mean, in the offseason, there's going to be, like, is Hayes here now? I remember you saying last year,
I thought one of them be gone.
Yeah, and I didn't disagree with you where you're trying to maybe sell high on Hayes, who was starting center fielder in the All-Star game last year. But it is going to be fascinating, and he's not that old of a guy. He's 29 years old right now. I mean, you can still get, at a minimum, another couple of really productive seasons out of him.
Yeah, I feel like the Orioles, and they do a lot of things right, I felt like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too this offseason. Like, I'm going to keep all my prospects, and I'm going to keep all my major league guys and try to suck as much juice out of that piece of fruit as they can. And with Austin Hayes, and we like Austin Hayes, and he comes on the show.
Absolutely.
Like, it might have been the right time to sell high on Austin Hayes coming off an All-Star appearance, especially when he's had injury issues in the past.
For sure. And because you got some of the guys in the pipeline, like we were saying, and Cowser, of course, got off to that really hot start. And Beavers have at Kjerstad now being up here now, where it's you know, it kind of creates this logjam where you're trying to get creative, Brandon Hyde is, and getting these young guys reps, and now Hayes is kind of, you know, basically just going up against lefties.
A reminder, we are 25 days away from the trade deadline, and I fully expect, and the day after the trade deadline, if they do what they did a year ago,
there's
going
to
be an I've got something to say.
Yeah, they deserve.
I expect some of these dominoes to be gone to affect what their decision making is this coming off season. Like, I don't think everybody's back.
No, there's no shot. I think the thing that I'm most interested in is what, if any, of the guys on the major league roster right now are included in those potential deals. And keep going back to Orion Mountcastle. You know, is he part of something? And do they part ways with one of their top four guys, like a Kerstad, a Mayo, a Basayo? We both don't expect Jackson Holliday to be in that mix, but do any of those guys go elsewhere?
It's going to be an interesting 3+ weeks. We will be locked in on it. If something goes down, we will have immediate reaction on it. But coming up next, it's a big MLB.com hour. Orioles and the A's, as we mentioned, starting a 3-game set in Oakland tonight. Jake Rill covers the O's for MLB.com. We'll get his thoughts on the way they're playing on this bullpen, on Anthony Santander, on much more. Jake Rill joins us next here on The Fan.